United States v. Della Rose, Mr. Spivak.
Good morning, Your Honor. Barry Spivak for the defendant, Stephen Della Rose. Your Honor, there's a joke sometimes among defense attorneys that there's really only one federal rule of evidence. Not that I ascribe to the joke, but the joke is basically that the only rule is that whatever the federal government wants to introduce into evidence is admissible.
Well, I guess you lose then.
Well, well, here's why I think I might be able to win.
That was the rule, so it does make it easy.
Well, and here's why I think we might be able to win this time, and that's because I want to begin by presenting a hypothetical to the court. And the hypothetical is, as you recall, this case involved three defendants. That would be Mr. Della Rose, a Mr. Eilenfeld, and a Mary Romanski. The hypothetical is, instead of Mr. Eilenfeld pleading guilty and agreeing to be a witness against Mr. Della Rose, the situation is Mr. Della Rose pleading guilty and being a witness against Eilenfeld. We have this same case, except Mr. Della Rose, having pled guilty, is now a witness against against Eilenfeld.
That's the other rule. First one on the bus or the train.
Well, that's sort of a rule with respect to
who
gets the break. But here, what happens here, Your Honor, what I'm getting at, Your Honor, is if it had been, Della Rose had been the government witness, and the government had come up with a witness named DeFrancesco, and DeFrancesco had said, I had a conversation with this fellow Eilenfeld, I spoke to Eilenfeld and negotiated getting a fake identification card for Eilenfeld. And the government wanted to introduce that as 404B evidence against Eilenfeld. I submit to the court that would have been entered into evidence as 404B evidence against Eilenfeld if Eilenfeld was a defendant in this case. And the only difference in our particular situation is it was the defendant, Della Rose, who wanted to introduce that evidence. So if we're going to use that general principle, if this had been the government introducing
Are you saying there wouldn't have been a hearsay problem with DeFrancesco if the defendant had been Eilenfeld?
I think there would be no, if there wasn't a hearsay problem with Brits, then I don't think there would have been a hearsay problem with Eilenfeld. That's my first response to Your Honor's question. The second thing I would say is this, Your Honor, with respect to the DeFrancesco testimony, there's two parts to it. The second part is the part where DeFrancesco says, I negotiated with Eilenfeld and was prepared to say negotiate in order for him to get me a fake identification card. I don't think that's hearsay. I think that's used to show the conversation that DeFrancesco had with Eilenfeld, and it shows that Eilenfeld had the wherewithal or believed that he would be able to get a fake identification on his own.
Here's my question. What is there to establish the reliability of Britz's out-of-court statement to DeFrancesco as to where he got the identification card?
I'm sorry, could you repeat? I was anticipating something else at the end.
What do we have here that would establish the reliability of Britz's out-of-court statement to DeFrancesco as to where he got the ID card?
I don't think that, as between Britz and DeFrancesco, I don't think either is any more reliable than the other. Britz's testimony as to where he got the fake identification card is no more reliable than DeFrancesco's testimony as to where he got the fake identification card. DeFrancesco's testimony contradicting Britz is just two people saying two different things. Well, this is all what happened with DeFrancesco and Britz, the first part of it, Your Honor. I analogize it to, Britz says, the issue in the case is who was driving the car. Britz says, I saw Della Rose driving the car. And then DeFrancesco was called and he said, you know, I spoke with Britz. And Britz told me he didn't see Della Rose driving the car, he saw Eilenfeld driving the car. I think that's admissible.
No, that would be hearsay without a hearsay exception.
No, Your Honor, I don't think it would be hearsay.
You relied on the Ritz's statement to DeFrancesco being against penal interest.
Your Honor, then I don't think it came in as being against his penal interest. Ritz's testimony, it would be totally unfair if a witness could come in and say he saw the defendant do something.
You can't have a situation where a witness comes in and says something, and then the other side brings in a whole bunch of people who says, oh, no, he actually told me something else. That would be unlimited hearsay.
Your Honor, I think that is a contradiction.
It's clearly hearsay, and therefore you have to find an exception.
Your Honor,
hearsay rule.
I apologize, Judge. No, I don't believe. I believe that if somebody says something happens and testifies in court in this situation that I saw I did this with Della Rose, and he tells someone out of court that he did it with someone else, I believe that is directly impeaching a particular issue, a non-collateral issue that goes right to the heart of the case. And I believe, Your Honor, I'll stick with my analogy.
The hearsay rule applies to impeachment, doesn't it?
But then, Your Honor, how does the government get in the information about Brit? They're getting in, supposedly, the statement against interest. Well, it's also a statement against interest with respect to Brit if he got the fake identification card from Islandsdale. It's still a statement against his interest.
That's a different point. Look, there is an exception for statements against penal interest. You were saying you don't need that exception.
Your Honor, I'm saying a defendant has to have an opportunity to rebut a statement by a witness.
No, you're claiming that what you're really saying is the hearsay rule has no application to impeachment.
Your Honor, I think...
Is there some basis for that? You don't cite any cases for any of this, do you?
Your Honor, I didn't find any cases that
were... You just made this up. You just made no,
Your Honor,
it's principle a principle of evidence law.
Your Honor, it's a question if the government...
Has this issue ever arisen before?
I couldn't find this particular issue arising before, Your Honor. But what I see in this case is if the government presents 404B evidence and a witness says something and then a second witness is going to contradict what that witness says, I think the defendant is entitled to get that evidence in front of the jury.
Let's say everything that you say is correct. How is it exculpatory in any event?
It's exculpatory, Your Honor, when you consider what the defense was. The defense was that Islandsfeld had the wherewithal in order to pull off this scheme. It was important for the defendant to be able to show that Islandsfeld was able to do this. Just like we had a situation where it was clear that Islandsfeld had gotten a fake identification in this case. The testimony that the government introduced made it more likely that Della Rose had done it in this particular case because Della Rose had done it on a prior occasion. The defense testimony would have shown that it was just as likely that Islandsfeld had done it in this case. So it helped the defendant's argument that Islandsfeld was capable of getting this fake identification and pulling off this scheme. And in that regard, it was relevant and important to the defense theory of the case. I think the second part of it, Your Honor, is the part about DeFrancesco going to Islandsfeld in order to get a fake identification card for himself. I don't believe that's hearsay, Your Honor, because there he's just talking about the statements that he had with Islandsfeld, that he had a conversation with Islandsfeld where they talked about getting a fake identification card, and it shows Islandsfeld's state of mind, that Islandsfeld had the ability and thought he had the wherewithal in order to be able to get a fake identification card. I think that is also admissible in order to prove the defendant's case, and it would have been admissible if the government was presenting that evidence. And I don't think the government ought to be able to present 404B evidence and then insulate it from attack by calling it hearsay or not allowing the defendant in order to attack it. It is not collateral, so it went straight to a crucial issue in the case, which was whether Islandsfeld or Della Rose had been the person who had obtained the fake identification.
You still have to find an exception to the hearsay rule.
Your Honor, I don't think the second statement is hearsay. The statement about the conversation.
The statement that Britt said it was Dennis who arranged this, that's hearsay because you want the jury to believe that that is true, that it, in fact, it was Dennis who arranged that.
No, Your Honor. No. That we just want to be able to argue to the jury that he's lying when he said it was Della Rose. The part that we want to argue for the jury is the second part. The second part where DeFrancesco is going to talk about how he went to Eilenfeld and negotiated getting a fake identification card for himself. The first part may arguably hearsay, or not hearsay, but it may argue it would be impeachment. It would be impeachment, Your Honor. It's direct impeachment to what he said. And the defendant could argue that impeachment. He can argue on the first part.
You're just repeating yourself.
Your Honor, well, we believe that the second part is not hearsay, and the first part is impeachment, and it went to show that Mr. Eilenfeld was capable of committing this crime. Thank you, Judge.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Spivak. Mr. Jackson?
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. With respect to the first issue, the only issue that's been argued thus far is the issue with respect to the admission of the Brit testimony versus the admission of the DeFrancesco testimony. The government admitted or sought to admit the Brit testimony but had 404B evidence. The defendant doesn't challenge now the admissibility of that evidence. Instead, he argues that, well, if Brit's testimony was admissible, then so should DeFrancesco's testimony be admissible.
Well, Mr. DeFrancesco's testimony was impeaching, wasn't it? I mean, in the sense that it contradicted Mr. Briss's testimony about who arranged the false identification card for him.
As presented to this court, one could argue it to be impeaching, but as it came out at trial, it was not.
See, yeah, I know you. What you're saying is that the proper groundwork wasn't laid for the impeachment, right?
That's correct. As one of the arguments, the proper groundwork, as well as it's not itself impeaching. In addition, Your Honor, we stated there it intertwined the issue that the court had with this, and that is that the defendant was never seeking to use this merely as impeachment. As they argue now, specifically, they're seeking to use it as both impeachment and substantive evidence. And as such, the court concluded that it was improper to admit this evidence, the evidence that DeFrancesco. The major difference between
the two. Well, I don't understand. Why isn't DeFrancesco's statement a statement against his penal interests, therefore an exception to the hearsay rule?
Britt's statement.
Britt's statement repeated by DeFrancesco, right.
Because the penal interest portion is his statement that I received a false ID. That's the statement that's against the penal interest.
No, but look what you do. You're taking a single statement and you're partitioning it between the parts that are incriminating and the rest of the statement. When has this ever been done before?
Well, which is why the statement in its entirety stays out.
I don't understand that. It seems to me if the statement is a statement against penal interest, the various things said in it are more credible than the ordinary hearsay. If you're confessing a crime to someone else, presumably what you're saying in that confession is more likely to be true because you're exposing yourself to prosecution. And that would include the details that you include in the statement, all of which could be used against you. And so, for example, if you say in your confession you went to Dennis, and then the person you've confessed to repeats that to the police, well, this is some information. Yeah, Dennis is involved in this. They go after Dennis. I've never seen a situation before in which the government or the judge tried to break up the statement against penal interest into the sentences that were actually incriminatory and the rest of the statement.
The statement.
I mean, what if Britt said to DeFrancesco, "My name is Britt, and I'm a thief," or something? Do you think the government could exclude the part of the statement in which he said, "My name is Britt," on the theory that is not self-incriminating? That's your theory, which neither you nor the judge provided any support. That is your theory, isn't it?
what will not do by.
Well, why not?
Because the evidence had already come out that Britt.
I suppose it is. Suppose DeFrancesco says, Britt said to me, my name is Britt, and I'm a thief. And according to you, you know, my name is Britt, that would be stricken from that evidence because it's not incriminating.
No, that evidence was the evidence that, in fact, the government presented. That evidence would remain.
No, no. Your view is that's hearsay. DeFrancesco's saying that Britt says, my name is Britt. That statement, that piece of the statement, my name is Britt, that's hearsay.
As it relates,
and on your view, that's inadmissible.
As it comes
even
out,
though it's part of a statement against penal interest.
As it comes out through DeFrancesco. And our position is that this is evidence that came out.
Yes, of course. The point is, you think you should take an incriminating statement against penal interest, take each of its sentences separately, and any sentence which is not itself incriminating, that's excluded.
And our position, Your Honor, is that even if you were to conclude that this statement somehow was admitted, that it was admissible against penal interest, that we're now still talking about a statement that relates to 404B evidence, a statement that would be used to impeach on a collateral matter, which, to the extent that there would be any error with it, it would be harmless error, because we're not talking about something that, as Judge Rosner expressed earlier, we're not talking about something that is exculpatory, relating to the acquisition of the ID issue, that being the James George ID. Who obtained the James George identification card and from whom? The issue with respect to the DeFrancesco testimony still would not resolve that. Instead, had it come in, it would have been a matter that relates to a collateral matter, and thus any error emanating from that would be a harmless error, would be our position.
Well, of course, the Spivak's argument, what's sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. If you want to show that De La Rosa has this, arrangement with Romanski and so on, then he ought to be able to show that Dennis, according to Britt, maybe, or DeFrancesco, also has this access to Romanski.
He had to do so within the bounds of the rules of evidence, Your Honor. And what he sought to do was to submit into evidence a statement that was not a statement or an admission of the party opponent.
Was she a witness, or?
I'm sorry, Judge.
Was Romanski a witness?
No, Romanski did not testify.
But was she prosecuted also?
She was prosecuted as well, and she pled guilty as well, Your Honor. So the government did not call her as a witness. And the defense did not, the difference remains still that the evidence that the government presented was the admission of a party opponent, therefore non-hearsay. What the defense sought to admit was not an admission of a party opponent, that being the testimony or the statement of Britt and the statement of Eilenfeld, neither of which were a party to this case, although they both were witnesses. And as such, that evidence was not admissible. Your Honor, for those reasons, the government submits that there was no reversible error, and that we request that you affirm the decision. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Jackson. Mr. Spivak, how much time does he have? 4 minutes?
And I'll be quick, Judge, anyway. The fact is, I don't believe this is, it was Rule 404B evidence that the government presented that we were trying to rebut. I don't think Rule 404B evidence is collateral. We ought to be able to attack 404B evidence. I also note that the original contradiction of Britt's was, to a certain extent, with a prior inconsistent statement. The government has argued that it wasn't actually presented to Britt specifically. Did you ever tell DeFrancesco that you, in fact, got it from Eilenfeld and not De La Rose? But Britt had, in fact, denied getting it. Eilenfeld denied knowing DeFrancesco at all or having sold something for $1,500. Britt denied ever knowing Eilenfeld. So He basically, as a practical matter, had denied that he had gotten the card from somebody other than De La Rose. To a certain extent, Your Honor, I think it was a prior inconsistent statement, and that might be a separate basis for its admissibility.
Okay, well, thank you very much to both counsel. Next case for our